Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
Dicen que creen en sangre por sangre, pero solo entienden sangre por dinero. Son unas putas.
I understand blood for blood. Hector, I kept him alive. Kept him broken. I will save him to the last. Before he dies, he will know I buried every one of you.
Big talk. You done?
No. Not yet.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
I'm Rima.
And I'm David.
And this is Better Call Saul cast.
This week, we're covering Better Call Saul Season 6, Episode 8, Point and Shoot.
It's about cameras.
Yeah. Good titles nice. All season long.
Fun. Yeah, I know.
They did well on that.
I think next week is called Fun and Games, but then the week after that breaks the pattern. I forget what it's called. It's just one word, ninny or something. I forget what it was. But
interesting.
I remember it bothered the hell out of me the first season of Better Call Saul. Every episode title ended with O, Nacho, Gaucho, stuff like that. Except one was just called Alpine Shepherd Boy. I was like, God, why couldn't they think of an O name for that one? But I think now it's a tradition that they like break the pattern at least once a season. I don't know.
Yeah. They're teaching you to accept imperfection.
I guess so. Have to live with it. Well, welcome back, guys. I'm glad to be back covering the show.
Yeah.
Glad it's back on. It's almost done. You had a vacation, David. Was it nice?
It was very nice. We went to Ireland. We went to England.
You had dinner with Lucy and Peter.
We did. That was definitely a highlight in York. It's funny. I have a employee and friend who is from that part of England, and he said, "Where are you going on your trip?" And I said, "York," and he just burst out laughing. He said, "No one has ever answered York before that question."
Did you only go there to hang out with Lucy and Peter? Pretty much.
I mean, that was the purpose of going there, but we ended up, you know, hanging around the town for a couple days, seeing all. It's a very historic city. We actually really enjoyed it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But it was great to see them.
Yeah, that's cool. Awesome. All right. Well, let's get into it. It's Better Call Saul, Season 6, Episode 8, Point and Shoot. Rima, what did you think of this one?
Wow. I think I'm still processing. I may not be very good tonight because it was pretty heavy. It was intense. Very emotional, but I mean, I really enjoyed it.
We can start, like, having a couple of weeks in between when we record.
I'm sure everyone would just love that. Like, I need time to process, y'all. Y'all okay waiting on the podcast?
Let me go to therapy a couple times. And
yeah. Nope, this is my therapy session.
Rima, you're always good. I'm not worried.
Oh, no, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Well, I feel like because we're also covering Stranger Things too, and it's been really heavy and dark, mm-hmm. and it's just like, gosh, I just feel like I haven't been able to like fully process it. So much is happening, so many storylines and things, and then coming back, you know, after the break, I didn't do any type of rewatch. Did you guys do any type of like rewatch or watch the last episode before the break? I didn't either. I thought maybe just to help kind of refresh where we left off, but I don't think it was needed because they definitely jumped right into it. It was just really emotional, but I did love the episode. just to answer at least that question. I thought it was a fantastically written, acted episode, and it answered some things, but also kind of left those questions that still need to be answered. I loved it.
David?
So have to say something that I don't enjoy saying because I love this show and I love this universe, but I did not love this episode.
Oh.
It was, I would say, one of my least favorite that they've done.
Interesting.
Not that this is on a very high bar, right? This show has a very high standard. It still is a quality episode of television, but...
it's like you get an Oreo cookie and a piece of it is cracked off.
Yeah, exactly. a pizza that's not your favorite. As I say, on a very high scale of quality, but I think this show is very highly crafted in writing and storytelling, and I thought some aspects of this episode were sloppy in that regard and left me a little unsatisfied. So I know we'll get into the details.
Yeah.
It was heavy and emotional, and definitely these are characters you've come to care about. So it had impact on me, but I just thought it had some weaknesses as well.
Oh, I'm interested to hear your thoughts. Yeah. You might make me not appreciate it. I'm dying to hear that.
That is not the goal.
I know, but we've ruined
Rima's enjoyment of the
episode. I don't think that's possible with this show, but I love hearing, like, it makes me think a little harder about something that I might not be considering. So I love that. I love that you've got a little bit of a different, thought process there. So I appreciate that. We'll see.
I loved it. I thought it was really good. I thought it was full on Breaking Bad intensity. Like, if the first episode of Better Call Saul had been anything like this, we would have just been like, well, they're just doing Breaking Bad. And even with the music, I mean, Dave Porter has done the music throughout, but I think it's been different because it's a different tone. But it's like we're watching one of the full on, intense Breaking Bad episodes. I thought it was a pretty satisfying end for Lalo, even though it was what we kind of predicted. Still, just the idea of his corpse, his body being buried under that lab where Walt was working that whole time is chilling and too hard to resist. So I'm glad they went there, as disturbing as it is to think about. And I don't want to get too much into the details, but just because I brought that up, thinking of Howard being there next to him was a total shock and surprise and crazy. These two guys that never met each other and they were there the whole time. It's so weird, but it's really fascinating. And it's just such a Breaking Bad thing to do. It's fucked up.
My first thought there, and I did think that was the best thing in the episode, was that outcome. But my first thought was Rima was right all along. You were the first one that put that idea in our head, I think, that Lalo is going to end up in there, buried in there.
That's right.
Bidding
good call. All right, let's get into our points, Rima.
All right. Well, I want to go ahead and just kickstart it, kind of what you were mentioning there, Jason, with Howard. They do so well kind of starting right where we left off. So that's where this episode begins, is the aftermath of Howard having just been shot in front of Jimmy and Kim.
Not counting the little teaser at the beach.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was amazing. I had mentioned that, but I feel like I knew right away. Did you guys know right away, what that was about before we even saw his car? I feel like when I saw the shoes, I was like, those look like shoes Howard would wear.
Like you said, I didn't go back and rewatch, so I wasn't in the Better Call Saul mindset. I just turned it on and realized halfway through the sequence that my brain wasn't turned on, that I was just like, oh, the beach. I love the beach. And then I had to wait a minute, what am I seeing here? And I had to go back and watch it again. And then, I'm like, okay, Howard, that's Howard. That was Howard's car. Namaste on the plate. Yes, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we kind of assumed, when we talked about the last episode after Howard had been killed, how do they deal with this? And I guess I hadn't thought far enough ahead to think that Mike would come in and do his cleanup, you know, fixer. In quotes, that, yeah, his fixer mode, mm-hmm. and clean that up. I thought, you know, Jimmy and Kim were going to have to deal with that. And I'm thinking, gosh, they don't even know what to do or how to handle this. How's that going to end up? And so when I saw that, I was like, this looks a little too perfect for Jimmy and Kim to have handled. Yep. You know, this looks like a... And then when you realize it was, you know, Mike was the one behind it, which seems very beautifully crafted. I mean, it was very well done with the shoes washing up on the beach. I don't know how they got that one set of footprints, you know, that walked from the car to the beach and the
Mike
edge of the water.
Figure it out. If
yeah, I don't know
could.
How they did that exactly.
I was thinking, I don't know, this was dumb probably of me to even consider, but I'm like, wait, did they actually dump the body in the ocean? Because if people find it, it's going to have bullet holes and it's not going to really make sense. Why would you go out into the ocean and shoot yourself? But then I realized, no, they probably hid the body somewhere else.
Yeah. And they did. Yep. But, you know, having to see, because we had to kind of live with Howard lying there on the floor this entire time up until the end.
He's like Weekend at Bernie's for Patrick Fabian this episode. Just had to lay there the whole time. Poor guy.
I
hope he got paid his full rate.
I hope so too. You know, I wondered how much of that, like there at the end, was really him, or if they kind of...
I heard on the Better Call Saul Insider podcast that it was, he had a stand in for some of it, but he was also there for hours.
Yeah. I knew he was on set. Yeah, I knew he was on set.
But, well, he was laying there for hours, they said. So
gosh, I always kind of assume that it's some sort of body double or dummy or something, but it's funny to learn that it's really him just lying there.
That would be hard.
At least for some of it.
You know, like, what if your nose is itching or whatever? I mean, just, you know, having to, I need five.
Scratcher.
No scratcher over here. But, you know, to have to be, like, constantly reminded of that, you know, and then when Jimmy's laying on the floor... when he's tied up to the chair, and I mean, he can't get out of the darn chair, and so he's right there, like eye to eye, having to lay there and see Howard.
Yeah, you'd pretty much want to land anywhere else.
Exactly. Yeah, I was like, dude, I don't know why you thought you were going to break that chair, and yeah, that's exactly where you're going to end up. But I just thought, you know, I felt absolutely miserable knowing that a guy like Howard, you know, I know he wasn't like the perfect guy, and you know, he probably deserved to be taken down a peg or two, but, you know, he did not have like such a terrible crime against him that he deserved going out the way that he did. And then having to be buried in the same grave as a guy like Lalo. And, you know, there at the end, it kind of looked like Mike thought maybe the same thing. You know, Mike always has this mindset of, you know, in the game versus not in the game. And it seemed like he was still trying to kind of respect Howard in a way, you know, telling the guys to be easy with him, you know, and, taking his wedding ring, and I'm sure that was for identification purposes, or maybe it was for his wife. Maybe his wife would like to have his ring, you know, trying to be considerate. But
I thought
it just,
yeah, it might have been. Well, they left it on, it was on the wallet in the car.
Yeah.
And just to sort of go along with the story that he was having problems in his marriage, maybe.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know though. Maybe, I don't know how Mike would know that. So I don't know.
I don't know either, but it seems like the opening scene that we talked about was really beautifully crafted, and it seems like it was a little bit of an ode to Howard from Mike, because it was definitely, I think, more of a fitting ending than what he ended up walking into and what we know as a reality and how he went out. But it's also kind of sad to think that now everyone thinks of him as a drug addict that killed himself, you know? So, I mean, right. I'm kind of torn with that.
Yeah. It's interesting because, as Mike said, you know, we're just going to go along with the story that you guys made up for him, which is really disturbing in some way I can't quite put my finger on, but also convenient for them because they want any heat to be drawn away from them. But, yeah, they had to put cocaine in the car and everything. And it's they were talking about ruining his, not totally ruining his reputation, just putting a stain on it that he could come back from. But now his reputation is ruined and he can't come back from it.
Exactly.
It was a cold ending for sure for him in a lot of ways.
Yes. In a lot of ways.
And well-deserved, David just says in his head.
No, that's not true.
I'm just kidding.
I was less of a Howard sympathizer, I think, than both of you, but he did not deserve that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else, Rima?
No, that's pretty much it. Just the last little send off for Howard, and just how he ultimately ended up, and the fact, and like you mentioned, the, you know, we know now Lalo is there under the lab, but to think that Howard, for eternity, yeah, is face to face with the man that murdered him, you know, and
well,
and that's,
yeah, as you said, because that's what I was thinking too. Wow, they only met once, and yet they're fated for eternity to be together. And then again, the lab got exploded, right?
Isn't that what happened to it? It did, but I don't know that. I mean, there was no mention of that. I mean, I don't think that they knew, yeah, that whenever they were
in Breaking Bad. But I'm just trying to think what would happen to their bodies. I guess they were deep enough that it would.
They looked pretty deep. I don't know about that explosion and how much, like, of the floor that, right, you know, right, that broke up in the explosion or anything, but they looked about 9 feet deep with that grave in the lab, and then it was covered by concrete.
Yeah, I guess you're right. So probably they're still down there.
Probably.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
David?
It did occur to me that what they really were lacking there was the Walt body disposal technique, is what they needed.
I know, yeah. And I also thought, what about the two of Gus's guys that that Lalo shot? And it's like, they're not important. Don't worry about them.
Yeah, they took them somewhere else. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. So you guys have already made me feel a little bit better at the episode because you're reminding me of the parts of it that were great. And I thought the beginning and end were really good. And there was a lot of emotional power and irony to Howard's end, so to speak. And you know, and where and how he ended up. But I said it, so I'll go into the things that I didn't like. And
then
two are welcome to talk me out of some of these things, and maybe there's points I missed. But so generally, I think this show thrives on three things, which are very clever plotting, compelling character development, and humor. Humor is a big part of this show. So, you know, fairly saying some of the episodes are heavier than others, this show essentially had no lightness or humor to it at all, in my opinion. So that sort of Better Call Saul aspect, as opposed to Breaking Bad, and even Breaking Bad had a lot of humor mixed in.
Yeah.
So that to me
was completely
missing. True. So that was missing. And then what really bugged me, because I am a plot stickler, storytelling detail stickler, is I just thought it had some weak aspects to it. So one of the things I've been wondering about, and we've talked about several times, is the continuity aspect from prequel to original show about how are they going to explain away Saul not knowing that Lalo's dead, if he indeed is, and they decided to just ignore that. Maybe they're going to provide some explanation for it later on, but essentially they just decided to create that major continuity error and let it exist, and that kind of bothered me. I just thought it was lazy.
Well, I think they thought they covered it, because Mike said he's not coming back, and that he didn't say he's dead, and right. Saul or Jimmy should know what that means, but there's enough open-endedness to it that a part of him still might be worried that that's not what Mike meant.
Well,
I think that's,
I didn't that's buy that. To me, he said it twice and said it really strongly, and it was very clear what he meant. So that was just my reaction.
Well, and this is how it made sense. I totally get that. And I was thinking about that too, but then I watched it again. The first time they thought or were told in the assassination attempt when they sent guys down there to Lalo's house in Mexico, he was told he's gone, not coming back. And that was all. Not that he was dead or that he was killed. He's gone. He's not coming back. He came back. He walked right up into their living room and he was back. And Mike is saying the exact same thing to him here. He didn't say he's killed or whatever, or hey, he's going to be buried under a meth lab, you know, anything like that. He didn't come right out and say it. I feel like that's why Jimmy or Saul in Breaking Bad might still have that little doubt. Like, y'all told me once he wasn't coming back and he did.
Fair enough.
That's what did it for me anyway, thinking, well, that's maybe why he would think that.
I get that. And you might be right. There also is Ignacio in this question. And again, I think it was made very clear to Saul that Ignacio is dead, was made very clear by Lalo.
I missed that part.
Well, he told him that Ignacio was the one who betrayed him.
That doesn't necessarily mean...
That was the way I took it.
I came away feeling like, you know, he probably should know that Mike meant he's dead, but since he didn't say it, that leaves room for doubt. And now with what Rima just said, that just really aces it for me. Okay, perfect. And then with Ignacio, he doesn't know. Ignacio could be on the run from Lalo, you know?
I didn't find it that plausible. So no, what you guys say makes sense. So we can agree to disagree on that one. I did not find the confrontation between Lalo and Gus very satisfying. To me, that was mainly a structural issue. And I don't know that there's anything the writers could have done about this, but this is the problem with a prequel. We know Gus survives. We know Mike survives. We know Saul survives. I mean, maybe Kim was in question throughout this episode. Turned out she survived it too. But that, to me, took just a lot of drama out of the confrontation that was the crux of the episode. And there also wasn't a lot of surprise in what happened. We saw Gus set that up a few episodes ago, and then he executed it. So to me, that sort of lacked some drama. And it also kind of relied on the talky villain syndrome, where instead of just killing Gus, you have Lalo shooting the video and letting Gus say his piece and all this stuff. And I just found it a little implausible.
The thing I found implausible is that Lalo would have that same smirk on his face in death. To me, that just seemed like, okay, this actor does not want to look bad, and I have a little respect for that. When you die, you don't smile. And then I heard Tony Dalton on the Better Call Saul Insider podcast. They were saying, what do you think was in his head? And he said, I think he was thinking, all right, you got me, you bastard. You got lucky. I'll see you in hell. And that did make me like it a little better.
Yeah.
See, that's how I took it. It just felt, for me, it felt very on point for Lalo. That
it's like a cartoon to me.
That was, in my opinion, fitting for his character.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, and then the other aspect that didn't hit for me is I felt like some character things happened in this episode that didn't really fit with these characters that we've known for a long time and that have been spent, you know, a lot of time and effort has been spent setting up who they are and how they behave. I didn't love that Mike, who is a very sharp operator who thinks to the second, third, and fourth level of every situation, fell for every Lalo ruse in the last two episodes. That happened several times. I didn't really like that Kim sort of went to pieces all of a sudden in the life and death situation, which I think, again, a lot of time was spent setting up her as a character who wouldn't do that. I didn't really like that Lalo left Saul alive. I mean, his body count is up in double figures. Like, why in the world would he do that? Why would he not just kill him before he left? He didn't seem to intend to come back there.
Yeah, I was afraid.
I thought he was going to come back.
Yeah. I don't
think he intended to die at the laundry.
Yeah, but why go back? The whole point was to get the footage of the laundry. I was thinking if I didn't know that Jimmy survived this, I would be worried that Lala was just going to kill him as soon as Kim left. But we know he survives, and yeah, I agree.
And I didn't really think there was any reason he wouldn't kill him other than we know he needs to survive in the next show. So I just felt all those things. They're not huge things. They weren't terrible. But I just felt it wasn't as consistent as the standard in the character.
The Kim one I can forgive, given that they just saw Howard killed in front of them. And, you know, even characters that are practically unshakable, given the right circumstances, can be shakable. So I was okay with that. Even Gus seemed pretty rattled after he killed Lalo. He was practically hyperventilating, and
he looked pretty scared.
Yeah.
In that moment.
And I felt that was okay. Like, it's an extreme situation. What was the thing about, like, Lalo was showing Don Eladio, you know, videotaping all of this and getting, and then when Gus said, "You can't kill me yet." "Oh, really? Why not?" "Because I want to tell him what I think." I thought that was kind of fun in the Breaking Bad way, or Better Call Saul way, where I feel like Lalo, I could see him being like, "Okay, I gotta hear what he's going to say." And then, when he said, "And I'm going to tell Hector that I killed all of you," that made that moment more dramatic for me, even though I agree, mm-hmm. we know Gus is going to survive, but still it's like, oh shit, that's big talk. And then he said the same thing I was thinking, that's big talk. And then that he kicks that cable, and he already had memorized how to move around in the dark and get his gun and start firing. I don't know. I thought it was pretty exciting. I liked that whole thing. But he got him onto his own ground.
I say, I'm a detail stickler, and I'm probably, maybe I'm quibbling too much. It's just the way it hit for me, because I'm used to these Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad episodes where you go back and unpack every detail and watch it five times, and it gets more brilliant every time you watch it. And in this one, I just thought they played a little fast and loose with that stuff.
The thing about Mike falling for Lalo's stuff, I can see you have a point there too. And that reminds me, listening to the Better Call Saul Insider podcast, they were talking to the writer of the episode, and they're asking him, they were saying, Vince Gilligan said, there's three geniuses in Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. There's Walt, Gus, and Lalo. And he said, if things had gone differently, any one of them could have been on top, which made me think, I don't think any of them was on top. They're all dead. But, anyways, then they were like, asked the writer, how do you like writing for a really smart person? And he was like, oh yeah, I really like it because the possibilities are endless. And I'm thinking, yeah, but if you're going to be a writer for a really smart person, don't you have to be that smart? I mean, you have to be at least almost that smart and know how to fake it, but, it's hard. And you're saying that, yeah, Mike kind of fell for it a little too easily, sort of means, well, maybe Lalo wasn't quite smart enough, you know?
Yeah, I think what happens in a show sometimes is, and that has happened very rarely to never in the universe of these two shows, but sometimes they need characters to act a certain way to make the plot outcome where it's going.
And they need to be dumb.
It doesn't always fit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I do see your point. What helps me, I think, and maybe it's just because, you know, it's sometimes harder for me to see the faults. But, you know, for me, looking at like Mike in Better Call Saul and comparing him to who he was and when we got to know him in Breaking Bad, you know, he's not that character yet that we know in Breaking Bad. I mean, he's still Mike, but I feel like everyone is growing and learning from everything that's happening in Better Call Saul. And so, you know, they've come away with those experiences. The experiences in Better Call Saul, they don't have those in Breaking Bad yet. So they're still kind of learning and growing. And I think Mike is learning and growing from this. I think he's definitely becoming Mike, more and more like Mike that we have in Breaking Bad. You know, and obviously, you know, Jimmy, who's evolving into Saul into the show. I feel like, and then Gus, I feel like Gus was still even just a little bit different, you know, than how we saw him in Breaking Bad. So for me, it allows a little bit of forgiveness because they're growing and learning and, you know, having these experiences of them, which makes them the characters that they are in Breaking Bad. That's,
well, that goes right into one of my points, which is Mike, who I agree. Yeah, I like that point a lot. But I think also that Mike, he feels more like Breaking Bad Mike in a lot of ways than ever in this episode, because as you mentioned, he's the cleaner, you know, for Saul, just like he was for Jesse in Breaking Bad when we first met him with Jane. And that only happened because Bob Odenkirk wasn't available to film, so they needed to get somebody else that works with Saul, and they invented the character of Mike.
And one of the great characters in television history was born.
Yeah. Yes. And so here we have, like, we're giving you a new fridge. I assume stainless is okay. And they're putting the body in and telling them everything. Well, they recount the scene, the plan that led to the opening scene about planting his car at the beach and the cocaine and all that. And then he's like, at some point somebody's going to ask you about this because this car was at your place, and you're going to call the police immediately and say that he was there and he was acting like he might have been under the influence, talking nonsense, blah blah blah, just telling him step by step exactly what to do. And Jimmy peeks through and sees them shoving Howard's body in the fridge, and and I did wonder if Mike would be concerned, because Jimmy Kimmy seemed in shock, that they might just flip out and tell the cops everything, including Mike's part in all of it. But he didn't seem to be worried about that.
And they had certainly implicated themselves in probably a number of crimes while running the scheme against Howard. So not to mention all his involvement with Lalo and a number of crimes there. So I think that's probably why he's confident. Yeah, I thought that scene was great, actually. The last scene of this episode. And I will stick up for the Better Call Saul, the earlier version of Mike. He ran some pretty clever schemes in Better Call Saul too.
Oh yes.
You know, the one with the truck and the whole thing with reverse tracking the gas cap and all that stuff. And I agree, his attention to detail and mastery of the situation came out in that last scene.
Because he's like, oh, my car's not here. And he goes, it's on the way. It'll be here when you need it. And he's just got all the bases covered. And earlier in the episode, he's got all of Gus's guys planted all around Jimmy and Kim's condo and checking in over the radio before he can go in and see if Lalo's there. He just came off like a total professional. And then one more Mike thing, just while I'm talking about Mike, is he was really upset that Gus put himself in danger, I guess. Like, are you happy with how this went? Because you could have gotten killed. And Gus is like, I could have. But I'm like, does he care about Gus as a person? No, I think he's either like, you're my meal ticket man. Or as I thought about it more, it's more like, you're making it harder for me to do my job. And I'm the guy who gets the job done. And you're going to fuck that up. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's Mike is acknowledging there that from the perspective of his function, it did not go well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like he did not succeed in protecting his employer.
Mm-hmm. And that was the whole point of everything he was doing.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still alive, so Mike should be thankful, I guess. And their enemy is off the board, which opens up like questions about where the show's going to go next, which I'm really excited about.
Yeah,
but
me too.
That was all I had to say about Mike. Rima, what do you got next?
My next point, while we're talking about Gus in the lab, I'm curious if y'all picked up on how Gus knew to go to the lab.
Well, he was talking to Kim, and Kim said that that Jimmy convinced Lalo to let Kim be the one to come and try to shoot Gus. And I think my thought was, okay, if Lalo doesn't really care who comes to shoot him, then he probably doesn't think it's going to succeed and it's for some other purpose, you know, otherwise he would choose the one who he thought was best going to be able to do it and send them and stick to it, something like that. So he's like, no, I think this is just a distraction. And what would he be distracting me from? He wants to know what I'm doing at the laundry. That's what I thought.
Oh, we'll see. You just made my point for me, so I don't even have to say anything else.
Is that what you were thinking?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, sorry. And I just kind of asked that because I kind of saw a lot of questions about, like, well, how in the world would Gus know that Lalo was at the lab? How did he know? And that's what I picked up on too, was you know, if you go back to episode one, when Lala was targeting the super lab, and Gus has that epiphany while he's serving up his spicy curls, you know, when he realized, love that scene. When he realized, you know, Lala wasn't after him, because, you know, Gus was very much on edge. He thought Gus, or that Lala was out there, and he's like looking over his shoulder, and he's got guys on him everywhere, thinking that Lala's going to show up any moment and pull a gun on him and kill him. And he ended up realizing in that moment, while he was serving up the spicy curls, thinking about Germany and the German engineers, that Lala was looking for proof of the super lab. And then fast forward to this episode, you know, Kim spills what she knows to Gus. And the red flag for him, as you mentioned, because he's very astute and heard that, you know, that Lala, you know, ordered Jimmy to kill Gus, but had changed his mind when Jimmy pleaded with him to have Kim go instead. What would make Lala change his mind? He's not merciful. You know, he's not, you know.
Yeah, he just didn't care.
Yeah, he didn't care.
Just needs a distraction.
Exactly.
And I thought in the moment, I was like, wait, is he trying to trick Jimmy into sending Kim for some reason? But after the whole episode was over, I'm like, no, I think, and then you watch it again, and he's like, fine, just send her. I just think he didn't care who it was. It didn't matter.
Right. It was a distraction. The assassination attempt, sending someone to the house, was just a distraction and not the real mission.
And it was a very specific distraction.
Mm-hmm.
It was the purpose of the distraction was to get Mike and his guys to go to their apartment.
Yeah.
And get them out of the way.
Which he did. We knew that because Lalo did that other trick of he knew Hector's phone was tapped. So he said, I'm going to go get Gus tonight. That got most of all of Gus's guys over to his place. But they made a point of saying Tyrus and his crew are going to be at the laundry. And then in this episode, when Mike found out that Lala was supposedly over at Jimmy's house, he said to his guy, all right, get Tyrus over to Jimmy's house or the condo. Yeah. And so that meant Tyrus and his guys left the laundry. And then we saw Lala outside the laundry in Jimmy's taupe Ford Taurus, looking at the rearview mirror and seeing all the guys take off. So yeah, that was the point, just to get the guys away from the laundry.
Yeah, and it reminded me of when Walt and Jesse killed Gale.
Yes,
and absolutely. The whole point was geography, that he says to Jesse on the phone, you're 20 minutes closer. And I think that was part of the point here, was to send them off in the wrong direction.
And I think the writers knew that would remind us of the Gale scene, because it's so similar. You're sending a good person to go shoot somebody to get out of a situation that they're in. And in the Jesse Gale instance, he did shoot him. Spoilers. But here it could have. So it couldn't have gone the same way here. Of course it couldn't have, because, or maybe she could have shot the Gus double, I guess.
Yeah, it's that with a twist. And I think the other point is, as you pointed out, Remo, with the Spice Curl scene and the fact that he had earlier planted the extension cord and the gun. Mm-hmm. I mean, he already knew that's where he was going to be. He long since figured that out.
Right.
I think all he figured out now was, oh, this is the moment that he's there.
Exactly.
And I would say, if we're going to take points away from the show for having Mike fall for Lalo's stuff, then we also have to give points to the show for having Gus figure it out. Twice.
Yeah, and if we want to be charitable to the writing, I think we could say that Gus actively deceived Mike, because he had a better idea what was going on.
I don't know. I think he didn't really start thinking about it until Mike left. You know, Mike left him there
Mike
and said,
left,
you hunker down here
he
with your two guys, and then he was just staring at the array of security
speeds. But he didn't call Mike to tell him.
Yeah,
you know,
he
wasn't like.
And by the way, when Gus was staring at all those screens, I couldn't help but notice there's this huge tangle of cables below that. And I would think that he would be like, your cable management is poor or something like that.
It is unacceptable.
Yeah, he could have called Mike and said, hey, he's going to be at the lab. Get your guys over there. Capture him. He obviously did want to personally confront Lalo.
Yeah, it was personal.
And get that revenge. But
It was
still could
a
have
risk.
Confronted him personally by having him captured.
Exactly. Still could have confronted him. I thought it was pretty risky.
Over, yeah. I think he was a bit like reactive there.
Yeah. I think that was maybe a little bit of I saw some conversation around fatal flaws for some of the characters. And I think, I don't know if it was a fatal flaw. I mean, he lived, but, you know, definitely I think a flaw for Gus to confront Lalo and thinking that two guys were going to be enough.
Well, Here's another thing. Like, he sent guys to kill Lalo, and they failed. And so he does it himself. If you're going to do something right, do it yourself. Maybe that's on his mind. And then he goes himself in Breaking Bad and kills Don Eladio. So maybe that's a change in Gus, you know, like if there's a really smart guy, maybe I'm going to have to do this myself. I don't know.
Maybe. But it was interesting to see him a little bit rattled there. Yeah. Because I was like, I don't know that I've ever seen Gus, you know, just seeing him a little twitchy early in the season when he knew Lalo was alive and thinking that he was out there somewhere. You could see he was very much on edge, you know, looking out for Lalo and worried that he was going to find him and maybe there weren't enough men to cover him. So it was interesting to see him very rattled in that confrontation. Like he wasn't sure that he was able to pull it off, you know, cause it was dark. He didn't know if he'd actually hit Lalo, until the end there. And it was a risk. It was a risk for Gus to kill Lalo. I mean, Lalo is, you know, but he was so dangerous to Gus. I think he had to take that risk. And, you know, Lalo did Gus a favor by faking his death, cause now Gus can kill him without anyone getting suspicious. And the only person that knows is Hector, and he communicates with Belle. So, I mean, it was kind of a perfect scenario for him to be able to get away with killing Lalo without anyone being really suspicious, because Hector, the cartel thinks he's dead. He could spell it out, I guess. But, you know, the cartel thinks he's dead. The police thinks he's dead. He's got the lab. You know, they're at a perfect place to bury the body. So,
Interesting with Giancarlo Esposito. He's been acting for a long time. I think he was on The Electric Company when he was a kid. And, But he got this part of Gus Fring, and it was such an iconic role for him. And now he's getting all the bad guy roles. He's in The Mandalorian as Moff Gideon, and he's in The Boys.
He does it so well.
He does it well, but I think he's trying not to play Gus in every one of those roles, because his thing about Gus is how still and meticulous Gus is. So his other characters are a little bit more loose, you know? And I still like Gus the best.
Yep, it's pretty great.
It's great.
So that was all that I had for that one.
Got another one, David?
Yeah, amazing character, amazing portrayal. So my next point was, where do we go from here? I think it's a little unusual that still with 5 episodes to go in a series or a season, for a show to really wrap up big storylines like this with still quite a ways to go. And these two confrontations, Lalo versus Gus, Saul and Kim versus Howard, have been like seasons in the making, and they both culminated at once. So what's left for us? So some of the things I see that are left are, top of the list is Kim. What happens to her? Why does she disappear from this universe? What happens to their relationship? They could have settled it in this whole confrontation episode, but didn't.
I was worried on her way over there. I thought she could die.
Well, she's the one character at risk. We don't know that she survives. Yeah. So that's the biggest one. I think we still have the Saul completing his transition to full cynicism.
Absolutely.
We haven't quite got there yet.
I mean, maybe something has to happen to Kim for him to get there.
Yeah. Is Sandpiper going to go through? Do they get their millions? Is that what gets him the new pad? So that's a smaller detail. Are we going to see Walt and Jesse in this show? Is a big one. And I think the last big one to me is, are we going to see the future plot line, Gene of Cinnabon, resolved? And will or will not that involve a reunion with Kim?
Yeah.
So many possibilities.
I mean, I hope this isn't too spoilery, but because the show art shows Gene in a red jacket, or he's got a red tie or something.
Yeah, the jacket is in black and white, but the jacket is red.
Yeah, I think they're broadcasting that there's going to be stuff with Gene. I mean, there has to be.
I feel like there has to. You can't just.
My question is, what's it going to be? Not will there be?
With 5 episodes left, like they have to go somewhere.
Yeah, I'm so excited to see all that. Anything else that's open that you're wondering about?
I think that's the main stuff that's left.
Yeah,
sort of.
Me too. If they answer all that, I'll be happy, I think.
How does Saul get the Statue of Liberty? when I'm out there for me.
I mean, my biggest question is because I do feel happy that with how they've wrapped up why he said that line about Ignacio and Lalo. I'm feeling satisfied with that. So the thing that's left for me is how can he be so sleazy with his assistant? What's her name? Francesca.
Francesca. Mm-hmm.
I feel like they still have to address that, or else it's a huge just mismatch of the two the character from the two shows. It's because it's so different. All right.
She is already getting fairly disgusted with him at this point.
Yeah, she is, but he's not, like, he just doesn't go there.
But he's still
sexually.
Still Jimmy. Yeah. You know, I mean, Saul's pretty deplorable. Yeah. If he goes full Saul, then he's embraced that side of himself. Yeah. So I don't know. I get it, that's how I'm trying to.
And there was the Kevin Costner thing. That was like one thing that was pretty sleazy.
Yeah.
All right. let's see. I had a whole point on what was Lalo's game, but I feel like we pretty much covered that. But it was really Lalo drove the episode, and you were trying to figure out exactly what he was up to, which I thought was kind of cool because there are so many things that we know about who survived. So they have to find different ways of keeping us guessing about why, what's happening and why. And I thought it was pretty cool that they did that. Kim and Jimmy, it was, the opening scene after the teaser with the glowing flickering candle and the Howard Porter music and Dave Porter. I've been saying Howard Porter. He's an artist, comic book artist. Sorry, Dave Porter. And Howard's thick blood spreading across the floor. I mean, we just covered a Kingdom on Walking Dead cast, this Korean zombie historical thing. And it's similar. They show really disturbing things beautifully. So you feel a lot of different things at once. But anyway, then you hear the sounds of Jimmy and Kim panicking, fading in. And that whole scene is significant because for a couple of reasons, but one of which is that is when Bob Odenkirk had his heart attack.
Yeah, this episode is when it happened.
If you listen to Better Call Saul Insider, they really sketched it out that when Lalo is telling them what to do in their apartment, they shot scenes of Kim because they shoot, you know, they'll shoot close-ups of some actors, and then they do the scene again, doing close-ups of the other ones or their parts or whatever. So they had shot the scenes of Jimmy and Kim already, but not Lalo. And then he had this heart attack. So then everything when Lalo's talking is 2 months later. They just had to restage the whole thing. And he said, he was like on the podcast, he's like, I had 2 months to memorize my lines. So, but I was trying to see, okay, does Bob Odenkirk look different? And it's hard to tell because he's supposed to be so flustered that he could be, he could look different. It'll be interesting to see going forward. But then the whole thing about Jimmy trying to send Kim instead, you know, you're going to go shoot this guy. Oh, no, send her. Part of me was like, you're sending your wife to shoot somebody. But
I did too. Yeah.
Right? What? Like, oh, that's dark. But, I mean, he just wants to get her away from Lalo.
Mm-hmm.
That's the main thing. He's the danger.
He wants her to run.
And he wants her to run, but he should know that she wouldn't run and leave him with Lalo. And she was going to do it. She went there and she saw those cops and thought about talking to them, but I think she just thought if I don't stick to the plan, then Jimmy might be killed. And so then I think that when she's walking up to Gus's place, they do a shot from above, and I'm pretty sure, I think they said it on the podcast too, that that's almost the same angle as when Walt went there to kill Gus in Breaking Bad. On purpose. And then as she gets to the door and the Dave Porter music is ramping up, and I'm like, God, I'm gonna have a heart attack. Not to make fun of it, but it's like so intense.
It's very intense. Yeah.
And I thought maybe she should have called Mike. Didn't he give her his phone number, you know, when she saw the police? I mean, I don't know. I guess she just didn't want to risk.
I don't know that she had Mike's contact information.
Oh, okay.
When they met. I mean, if they exchanged it, it wasn't anything we saw.
And she's yelling at Mike later. What were you supposed to do here? And she's all, shoot him, and pointing at Gus's double. And I was like, how did she know it was him? But then I didn't even catch this, but I looked at the script and Lala said, this guy, he's a house cat, black, medium height, short hair, glasses. He kind of looks like a librarian. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of funny. And then, I was thinking the same thing, that I couldn't believe, or I thought maybe Lala would have just killed Jimmy. But he questions him about the men who killed his people, you know, before he leaves. And he mentions the housekeeper and some 17-year-old, and the housekeeper was shot in the back. And it was interesting because I thought maybe some of them were Lala's family, but they were all servants. So it makes me wonder if he doesn't have any loved ones. But he did seem pretty upset. Nothing ever knocks him off balance, but he did seem pretty mad about the whole
thing. Yeah, and I was trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he wants to question Jimmy further about it, or
right.
Maybe he wants him for something else, but it doesn't really make sense. I mean, once he gets what he wants from the lab, it really wouldn't make sense for him to go screw around with them. He would go back to Mexico and give the footage to Eladio.
Yeah, but I just like that he was mentioned. He was like, my people were killed. Tell me what you know about this. It was a very human moment for Lalo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because even though if they weren't like blood family, he still saw them like his family and people under innocent. His protection. You know, those were his people at his home and people he cared for and had relationships with and under his protection. And,
right.
You know, he took that very personally. I don't know. I don't know exactly what his intent. I think he would maybe still have at least went back to talk to Saul and get what he could out of him. I do think he intended to go back. He looked pissed. He just looked, like you said, you know, that was where we really kind of see that like shield or facade that, you know, that Lalo, where he kind of takes off that act a little bit. It's not really an act because it is who he is, but you know, that the showman, I guess, of Lalo, that kind of human.
Just moment. Another he side pissed. Of him he's showing. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another possible tiny plot hole is, would Jimmy or Kim ever look up who lived at the house that Lalo sent them to? Seems like they would be kind of curious, like, who lives there? You know, who did he want me to kill?
And that could still happen after the fact.
I mean, in Breaking Bad, I think.
I mean,
right. Saul knows who works for a guy, Gus, but does he know his, he knows his name? Oh, he does.
Well, I can't remember. Oh gosh, it's been a hot minute, but he knows Mike, him and Mike have a relationship and he goes, I know a guy who knows a guy is, I think, how he talks to Walt about, you know, oh, you've lost your distributor. I've got someone I think you should meet or something. And kind of someone I know. He doesn't. I don't
think
maybe
he could know it's Gus, though.
Man, I wouldn't want to have anything to do with it. I'd be wanting to just stay far away from like someone like Lalo. He'd want me to go. I just, you know what? Yep. I'm never going to look it up. I'm never going to talk about it. I'm not going to discuss it ever again. I just.
Okay. Rima.
Well, so my Wexler watch continues. Counting down these last remaining episodes, we've got eventually between now and the finale to figure out what happens to Kim. It's one of my, I guess, biggest concerns and, you know, one of my biggest curiosity points. I mean, there's so many things I want, you know, answers to, but I really want to find out what happens to Kim. And it definitely happens. You know, she's alive. And I've definitely been on edge now that we're in the final episodes trying to figure out what's going to happen to her. And I still don't think she's going to die. I know that's a possibility.
Me neither. I don't either.
But I don't think that is what's going to happen. But I mean, I think there, you know, interesting things that happened in this episode, you know, Lalo being dead does help alleviate some of that danger. You know, he's not still out there. Like, she knew Lalo was alive.
Yeah.
Jimmy did not. And she's been very much on edge. So that has been eliminated now. They don't have to worry about Lalo. But now it feels like Jimmy and Kim kind of owe a little bit of a debt to Gus Fring. And so it's like they're, you know, straight out of, you know, the frying pan into the fryer, if you will. So I don't know. And I mean, thinking about how this event affected her, you know, Jason, you touched on it. She was going to walk right up and kill this a complete stranger in cold blood.
Yep.
I wasn't sure she was going to go through with it either. I was like, she's going to maybe try to find a way to get around this. And Jimmy was very much saying goodbye to her in that scene. Yeah. When he, at first I was like,
wanted her.
Gosh,
I mean, I'm surprised he wasn't like, just run. Okay. Get the fuck out of here. But
yeah, I mean, if you watch his eyes and his face when he's like trying to like, you know, get out of here, with his eyes, is like, get out of here without, because I mean, Lala would have very easily picked up on something had he tried to say something in code or whatever. So, I mean, I very much think he was telling her goodbye in that moment. And I did have a fleeting moment like, oh my God, is he turning full Saul in this moment by throwing Kim under the bus and trying to have her go do this? But no, then it became clear what he was doing.
Yeah.
But I don't think he knew that she was really going to like go through with it or not. I think he was wanting and expecting her to run and just leave him there in Lalo's hands. And of course, when she didn't return, Lalo was going to kill Jimmy. So I think it was really interesting that she was actually prepared to go through with that. And even though that this act, like she's literally walking up to this door, you know, after seeing Howard killed in front of them, being terrorized by Lalo, being sent to kill this perfect stranger that she has no idea who it is in cold blood. And even if it was to save Jimmy, this whole thing has to be weighing on her immensely. And when you go through and see how it affects her and how when she pulls up to the cops, the look on her face, how she walks across the road as she slowly starts to raise the gun, you know, as the door's starting to open. I mean, when she starts to kind of break down there at the end, when you look at her, when Mike is having that talk with them and they're sitting there on the bed, you can tell that this has affected her immensely. And I feel like maybe the Kim that we knew is not going to be the same after this. You know, she's not going to be getting over it anytime soon.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when Mike's sitting there going, this never happened, and you go to work, when you come back, everything's going to be back to the way it was. I thought that was sort of a meta commentary. Like, no, it isn't. You know, it did happen. Things are never going to be the same.
Yeah. Yeah. They're not going to be able to erase that. So I think it's definitely going to play out and probably have some kind of
impact
on how she, whatever her role is, or however she ends up not being in the show or I don't know. I'm still kind of hoping for that meeting up with Gene in Nebraska at the Cinnabon or something. You know, I'm still kind of hoping for that. I think she might end up in Nebraska. That's my hopeful ending. Maybe that's a little naive of me, but I can't help but hope for just a tiny bit of a hopeful ending.
Yeah. We should just go, full hopeful. And then if she ends up dying a gruesome death, oh well, we'll just be sad. But that should not let us, because I think through the whole series, they usually do throw curveballs at us, to David's point about how they kind of did not with the way Gus took care of Lalo. Although I think that was just too delicious not to follow through on. But anyways, they usually do throw curveballs at us. And the curveball for Kim would be for her to survive at this point, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone always thought she would die. But then maybe they think, now we're thinking that. So the curveball would be that she would die.
Exactly.
But you know, yeah. that I know.
Yes. Yeah, I don't think it's easy to predict. I really feel like they're going to keep throwing us curveballs. And, you know, that's why I feel like I can't really, I feel the only thing comfortable in saying is that I don't believe she's going to die. Other than that, I really am not comfortable throwing out any kind of theories or where that's going to land.
This is a show not afraid to kill its main characters. So yes. I'm not as confident as the two of you.
Yeah.
I get
I'm
80%.
You're right. No, I'm 75%. Right. My theory is she gets plastic surgery to look just like Jimmy, and she's who we were watching in Breaking Bad.
That she was Saul in Breaking Bad. I've actually heard that from some people thinking that she's Saul, not Jimmy. She is Saul.
Yep. Well, this whole time we've been watching how Kim Wexler turns into Saul Goodman.
Yep.
All right, David.
So I wanted to talk about Howard and what we're left with from, you know, somebody who really, I think, started out as sort of a bit player character and ended up being a big character in the history of this show. With a memorable finish.
That's one thing they do, and they talk about a lot in those podcasts about this show. They watch the actors that they hire and the characters that they've made, and if, and they said Kim, they didn't know if she was going to last. She might have just been for a few episodes, but they like to not plan everything out and stick to their plan no matter what. They like to see how the show evolves and really play up the parts that are working well.
Yeah, and he definitely was one of those parts. He grew into a bigger role. You know, at first he was just sort of a foil for Kim and Jimmy and Chuck. So what are we left with here? As you guys know, I was not a big Howard defender. I always thought he was a little pompous, slightly sleazy in a $3,000 suit kind of way, a little pedestrian in some ways. But ultimately, he did not deserve what happened to him in the end. His behavior wasn't great towards his older clients and this and that, but what happened to him ended up far outside the sort of lane of his life. And I thought that was an interesting statement, as we learn over and over and over again in this show, there's no defense against coming into contact with this world. Like it's a voracious monster that eats everything in its path.
Especially with him, he had no preparation for it.
Right. He was completely unprepared and overmatched for it. And but he also was the center of a lot of fun plot lines. He was some comic relief in himself. And the way Patrick Fabian played the character. So that was great. I think ultimately one thing I flashed back on with him is something you really don't want to believe, because you're so sympathetic to Jimmy in the history of this show. So much of it is told through his perspective. But, you know, what Chuck said was that, Jimmy, you don't mean to do it, but ultimately you ruin the life of everyone you come into close contact with. Mm-hmm. And Howard ended up living that and sort of proving it out.
Let's have others.
Yes. I mean, that wasn't Jimmy's intention or Saul's intention for him to end up dead, but that's what happened. So just one more time, sort of Chuck turns out to be right on that point.
Yep.
Well, and that's another reason to worry for Kim, too.
Yep.
Like, you know, Chuck did have
I think she's going to die.
I could say so many things about Chuck, but I mean, he was right. So much of what he did and touched and people in his life, you know, were not for the better. And
And that's, I mean, a lot of what Better Call Saul about is cutting corners and being like, nah, it'll be all right. Don't be so, you know, have this stick up your ass. Just loosen up and play, you know, don't be such a stickler for the rules and all this, and that can end up getting people hurt sometimes. But he just continues to double down on that path in his life. Until he gets to the Cinnabon, and then he's a meticulous manager of the Cinnabon and learns how to be a better human being and be a good partner for Kim. The end. Okay. My last one is just some more points from, because it was a really good episode of the Better Call Saul Insider podcast. Although I also want to mention that during the break here, they came out with some special bonus episodes that are worth a look. I only got a chance to listen to one or two. One had the makeup artist, which was pretty fascinating when you consider she has to try to make them look younger to match their sequel, their Breaking Bad selves, but also things like when Mike and Jimmy were out in the desert all day, and I remember their skin looks so beat up, you know. Yes. She did all that. She's really good. There was an episode about the Saul Goodman segment of this show, American Greed, which I've never seen, but it's a true crime show, I guess, and their people did an episode in the same style, but with Saul Goodman's story, and the Kettlemans were featured in it. So that's fun to watch. It's on YouTube, but they did a podcast episode about that. They had one with Mark Margolis, who plays Hector, that I didn't get a chance to listen to, but I'm going to go back and listen to these. They had one with all the assistants of like Vince Gilligan's assistant and everybody else. They're called the Brain Trust. They had I'm most interested in this one. They had a mailbag Q&A with the showrunners and writers answering listener questions. But on this week's episode, they had Dave Porter on, talking about the music, which I thought was the music really stood out. I thought so. It was cool to hear him. They revealed Vince Gilligan directed this episode. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
They said they weren't initially sure if Mike or Gus would kill Lalo, and which made me think I'm glad it was Gus versus Lalo, because Gus needed something to do. Mike's got a lot to do already. And also this victory made him seem more of a force to be reckoned with, which, you know, he totally is in Breaking Bad. And as you've been saying, Rima, he's kind of been growing towards that. They talked about this being the one where Bob Odenkirk had his heart attack, and Vince Gilligan, he's usually not a very emotional guy on the podcast. He's just kind of an easygoing type of guy, but I thought he was going to cry on this one. He said he thought he saw Bob Odenkirk die, and they used this AED or automated external defibrillator on him, which he thought saved his life. And Vince Gilligan bought a few of them and gave them to friends, and had his staff take CPR classes after this. Recommended that we all do the same. They mentioned Patrick Fabian, even though he had a double for a lot of it, he still did have to lie there for hours. They said that the teaser with the scene at the beach was the only time in Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul that they ever shot outside of New Mexico, which I was kind of surprised by.
It was interesting.
It was weird.
Because I'm like, you know, they're nowhere near like the ocean. So it's like, you know,
it was
where
in Malibu,
did they go,
I guess.
To, you know, yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. And I already mentioned everything else that was on there, but I thought that was,
I thought it was funny points. That Mike said his odometer will be rolled to the exact number of miles. It's like, can't you just drive the car there? And then it would have the right number of miles. I guess he meant maybe they're going to bring it on a truck or something so people wouldn't see it.
Yeah, I guess you're right, yeah.
But yeah, think about it, a beach scene. It's the only thing that's non-Southwesty ever.
I mean, they did do Germany, but that was all just made to look like Germany.
Yeah.
Okay, any other points, Rima?
No, not points. No? I've got a few small notes, but no.
Okay, let's go into notes.
Okay, so we've talked about Lalo, but I feel like I've got to just say a few final things about him, because I just thought it was really brilliant how they took a throwaway line from Breaking Bad and created, you know, a really cool standout character. Yes, I know he was bad, but he was fun to watch. You know, two things can be true at the same time, and this is where I'm at, you know, and I know that there was only one logical. Yeah, there was only one logical end to his character. You know, Lalo burned fast and bright, and we knew he wasn't in Breaking Bad. So yeah, we could pretty much sum up that he was going to die and saw that this was coming.
They created two great characters out of that throwaway line.
Yeah, Nacho and Lalo.
Amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it was absolutely amazing what they were able to do with that line. But despite all of that, knowing that, you know, I knew he was going to die and had a pretty good feeling it was going to end up the way that it did, I was still rooting for him to survive just because I wanted more Lalo. I thought he was such a great character. I thought the writers did an awesome job creating him, like I said, from a throwaway line. And Tony Dalton was so brilliant in giving him life. And, you know, he had that infectious smile on his face, and that's how he went out. I felt like, you know, that is kind of what was a part of his charm as Lalo. And that's why, to me, it felt kind of fitting. But, you know, he did have some flaws, and Lalo couldn't help but be Lalo. You know, he had to be a showman all the way to the end. He wanted to create this whole scene, you know, to show Don Eladio at his compound, you know. And one reason I think that made Lalo such a great character is he did things with flair, and they always worked out, except when it didn't. I enjoyed it. I think he was a really great villain. You know, he was smarter than everyone. He was surprisingly agile. And, you know, I just thought, you know, it was really cool. The Lalo show was always on, and now it's canceled. But I just thought it was really great. But it was really just kind of sad to see this, the most chaotic evil character buried right next to the, like, a lawful kind of
most
good
milquetoast
character.
Guy.
You know, yeah.
The most charming next to the sort of not really very charming guy.
I mean, it's going to be crazy to rewatch Breaking Bad knowing that Lalo and Howard are buried under that there. Lab now. And I'm just like, gosh, it's going to be bizarre.
The fly's like, I smell something.
A lot of people were talking about the fly. Like, the fly's like, who's that a reincarnation of Howard or Lalo? Or is that what drew the fly in, was the dead bodies under the lab?
Yeah.
When the fly was there.
That's funny. Well, they were asking Tony Dalton, you know, would you want to spend time or have a drink with Lalo? And he's like, yeah, maybe one drink, but have two or three, it might get kind of sketchy or something like that.
Yeah. I know I didn't like Victor manhandling Kim. Victor is a creepy character to me. And when he was manhandling Kim a little bit, shoving her back down in that chair, I did not like that. Kim is my girl.
And Lalo and Gus are both like examples of these actors who've been around for a while. Lalo, I mean, Tony Dalton, not as long as Giancarlo Esposito, but he's been in some other things. But being given a role that really just has them shine, you know, because this role for Tony Dalton, I think, is going to open doors for him. You know, it's a big deal for him.
I hope so. I think it already has. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. We've talked about Mike, you know, the scene there at the end where he's given them the lecture. You know, that is the thing about Mike, is he is always Mike all the time, even when he's talking to Gus. I mean, Gus is his boss, and he sat him down and started to lecture him, you know, like he was a kid instead of like this ruthless drug kingpin and who just murdered his enemy. And I loved it. You know, I love Mike. I love that he stuck to his character. You know, that, you know, despite who he's talking to, he stays true to himself. So I enjoyed watching him dress down Gus a little bit about kind of going rogue there with Lalo. I loved
Gus
that looked they
like
brought...
he was about to kill him.
Yeah.
After that.
And I love that they brought the line back, the line where we were first introduced or had a whisper of Lalo or Nacho was... Saul said it again in this episode. It wasn't me, it was Ignacio. And it was repeated again when Saul was being, or Jimmy was being held hostage by Lalo, when he tries to reason with him that it wasn't me, it was Ignacio. So love it. Love that they brought it back. It seemed kind of fitting, seeing that this was Lalo's last episode. That was the line that we were introduced to him in Breaking Bad. And
yeah. And it really cements that this is what he's thinking. That
yes,
people
exactly. In
like
Bad.
Lalo's coming after me for something Ignacio did, you know.
Yeah.
That's what's on his mind.
Exactly. Yep. And then you already talked about that this being the episode that Bob Odenkirk had his heart attack. So we're so happy he came out. I know I was. Gosh, when the news of that broke out, I was panicked. But yeah, quite. I thought they did a good job. I whenever I rewatched it after knowing that, I don't know that I could tell. They were like, well, we hope that you can't tell, and we hope that there's no differences.
No, I wouldn't have known.
I wouldn't have known at
Still
all had
know.
They
Still
not, not said anything. So I couldn't see that. But they did a great job. So glad that Bob came back. And I'm kind of grateful that he did. I know not everyone was a huge fan of his movie Nobody. I absolutely loved it.
I thought everyone was a fan of that, except for me.
I'll say you.
I just don't like
you who I was talking
revenge
about
revenge movies where they glorify mass murder, but most people liked it.
I thought it was fantastic, and I'm so glad, even more grateful, because it was I thought in my opinion a really good movie, but even more grateful that he had that role, because he kind of attributes to all the
his survival
yeah. on all of the training that he did for that role. I think he like trained for like nearly 2 years for that film, if I remember correctly. I could be a little wrong. And they think that because of the shape that he was in from Nobody, you know, when he was filming Better Call Saul, that helped him survive the heart attack. So even more grateful for that role. So anyway, I think that's all my notes. So I'm done.
Cool. David?
I'm good.
All right. I just had a couple. I like that, you know, this episode's called Point and Shoot. There's a lot of shooting, but it also had to do with cameras. You know, he tells him to take Gus's picture, and there were shots through cameras. There were a lot of lingering shots through the security cameras, and also through Lalo's handheld. And the audio would be poor, like it, the quality would be through the handheld. I mean, who knows? Maybe that's actual handheld audio. Who knows? But I thought it was an especially great shot when he's narrating to Don Eladio about what it took the Germans to dig out this lab. And then it's from his point of view, but you see his foot. He kicks Gus's back, which mm-hmm. is like, dude, you're going to kick Gus Fring. And then it's switched over to the main camera when you see Gus fall on his face and it's better quality and sound. I don't know why, but that was just an impactful moment to switch cameras there. And then the music came in and everything.
They're brilliant artful, with their camera work.
Yeah.
They're just, they're really so many just, levels.
Yeah. It's art. This whole episode I thought was really artfully done. And I'm glad that they didn't ever like get lazy with any of that. You know, I mean, I think one thing, well, it's not a show about meth, but one thing that Breaking Bad that really stands out is Kelly Dixon's meth making montages. Mm-hmm. And they haven't done stuff like that. And she's gone. She worked on Obi-Wan Kenobi.
She worked on Obi-Wan. Yep.
Still very artful. Last point, Gus tells Lyle he's called out of town for the week. Is that just because he needs time to recuperate, or is there something he's going to do? What do you guys think?
I thought what we were getting there was more Gus character development towards the character we know. Like he's in control, calm, and detailed enough to take care of the restaurant and assuaging any suspicions on the part of his employees, even while he still hasn't even had a bullet removed yet. That's what I thought we were getting there.
Dude's getting like medical care from after being shot and still calls in to work and checks in.
Yeah. In a very calm voice. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of his cover story is that role.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Lyle is the best employee ever, agrees without a thought to open and close for 2 days. I was like, damn you. And to be the manager for the week. And he's even coming in singing Pollos Hermanos, Pollos Hermanos, delicious chicken grilled or fried.
Yes. I worry a little bit about Lyle though, because Lyle, I don't remember seeing him in Breaking Bad. I think there was a female manager in Breaking Bad at that time. So I'm like, oh, what happened to Lyle? He was such a good employee.
Yeah.
So
he loves Gus too. I want to see Lyle find out who Gus really is.
Oh,
that's kind of cruel, huh? It's heartless.
It would not be a good fate for Lyle.
Well, what happened to Lyle? He's not in Breaking Bad. What happened to Lyle? That's another question.
Let's remember that they shot this show second, so.
He ran off with Kim.
I mean, some of it's just logistics.
Yep.
All right. That is good. We will take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us. La cucaracha, la cucaracha, ya no puede caminar, porque no tiene, porque le faltan las dos patitas de atrás. La cucaracha, ya no puede caminar, porque no tiene, porque le faltan. All right, we are back. It's time for some news.
Okay, a lot of news this week. I'll try to keep it short and keep it interesting if possible. But first one to mention, Emmy nominations were announced yesterday on July 12th. We're recording this the next day.
Yellow Jackets got a ton. I was stoked.
I'm sure you were. But related to this podcast.
And fans of this show.
I know there's a lot of fans listening, probably enjoy Yellow Jackets as well, but keep it on point. Better Call Saul star Ray Seahorn has officially earned a long overdue Emmy nomination.
I hope she wins.
I hope she wins. Oh my gosh. She has been absolutely fantastic throughout the entire series, but especially she has really stood out, in my opinion, in this last season. And she's fantastic. So really excited for her that she's gotten her.
Man, that's rough. Her getting Melanie Lynskey, right? That she's up against. But
I think
they're just starting out. Melanie Lynskey has more seasons and chances. I hope Ray Seahorn wins.
Yeah. So Ray Seahorn was nominated for Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Drama Series for her portrayal of Kim Wexler. Also on Better Call Saul, you know, on that subject, Bob Odenkirk was nominated for Outstanding Lead Actor in a Drama Series for his portrayal of Jimmy McGill, a.k.a. Saul Goodman. Tom Schnauss has been nominated for Outstanding Writing for a Drama Series and for penning the episode Plan and Execution. which aired earlier this year. That was the mid-season finale of season 6. And then, of course, Better Call Saul itself has been nominated for Outstanding Drama Series. Unfortunately, in my opinion, Michael Mando and Patrick Fabian were not nominated. I thought Michael Mando was fantastic, and especially his final episode.
Yep. Wow. I saw only the Yellow Jackets because I just saw a thing on the Yellow Jackets Twitter that I didn't realize it was up against Better Call Saul. So now I'm like, oh, but Yellow Jackets is only on season 1. So I kind of hope that Better Call Saul wins all those now.
I mean, may the best show win, but you know, Better Call Saul is going out. Yellow Jackets is just coming in. They're going into their sophomore season. They've got some more time to rack up the awards. So there was an interview with The Hollywood Reporter with Peter Gould. This episode, as you mentioned, was written by Gordon Smith and directed by Vince Gilligan. So they said, first off, is the rest of the season locked now, or will you guys be tinkering away until mid-August? And he said, the picture editing is locked. There are still a few changes still coming, maybe on the series finale, but mostly we're doing sound and visual effects and color timing, things like that. So believe that everything is in place. And they said, so it's two series shaking deaths in two episodes with two cast regulars. As you arced out the final season, when did it become clear both that Howard and Lalo wouldn't survive the series, and then where in the final season those deaths needed to go, specifically not at the very end? And he says, it would be a totally reasonable choice to save those very dramatic deaths for the last couple of episodes, but we have other business to attend to. It's not something that we necessarily plotted out on a board and said, this is the episode to do this, and this is the episode to do that. But our main focus is really on the development and the psychology of the characters. So it sort of organically fell here, and that is where these things would happen. But there's a lot more drama yet to come. And they said, well, when you say it organically happened, at some point you were presumably able to look at some board and see that these two episodes and these two deaths were back to back and that they were middle of the season, a bridge between two halves. How did you look at that placement? He said, it's hard to answer that without asking about what happens next, because we know we needed quite a bit of a runway to take the plane off again. There's a world where the season could have been two seasons. There's also a world where it could have been one season of 10. We definitely had enough story to do a lot more than we did, but I think it's paced just about right. Also, sometimes it feels a little bit predictable to have your big events all happen in a string right at the very end. Also, there are different kinds of big events. The big events aren't always necessarily murders or deaths. There are other kinds of big events to have. So there you go.
Yeah, Cinnabons.
Yeah. We got a Nebraska. Nebraska is a big event.
Yeah. Like, so. David, you were saying this episode had no humor in it, and yeah, usually even in the heavier episodes, there's at least a little. I do agree with that. But one thing I love about Better Call Saul and even Breaking Bad is how the tone can vary so much. And I would bet anything we've got some laughs yet to come in these last few episodes, you know?
The shows definitely came together in tone. I mean,
yeah,
Better Call Saul started out a lot lighter than it has ended up.
Mm-hmm. But I've been surprised even this last season how funny it's been at times.
Yeah, and not only in the writing, but especially him. He's just naturally, I mean, he's such a gifted comedic actor naturally. And that's the way that character started out.
But, I mean, he's in the golf club yelling about anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
There's putting him in some pretty wacky situations. Yeah. Pretending to be Howard kicking a prostitute out of his car. It's dark, but I laugh.
I have a little bit more. There's an interview with Tony Dalton, who plays Lalo, from Variety. They ask him, was Lalo sending Kim to just be a distraction, or did he think she had a shot at killing Gus? And he says, well, when you're watching it, you think he's trying to get his plan to work. Then when you see he's in the lab, he just wanted somebody to show up there. That's why he doesn't care who shows up. He just wanted attention to that house so he could go record the lab. That was his plan the whole time. When Gus shows up, he says, I was just going to record the lab, but now that you're here, it's even better.
And he said, you had this big plan, but now the only thing you've built for yourself is your own tomb or something like that. I thought that was nice.
So they did ask, why did Lalo let Gus have a monologue and not just shoot him? And he says, the more that Gus says, the better Lalo looks to Eladio. if you just shot him, it would have been fine. But the fun, but the fact that he's talking so much shit about Eladio, like, this is even better. See, I was right the whole time.
Yeah, because the reason Eladio, kept Gus around is because he was such a big earner. So he had reasons. But yeah, this will help cement to Don Eladio that Lalo did the right thing. I like that.
Yeah. So he goes on. He says, see, I was right the whole time. This guy's a piece of shit. He couldn't just shoot him in the face and be done. He wanted to gloat because it's Lalo. He wanted to show off, and that's ultimately what became his demise, him basking in the glory. They asked, what did that smile to Gus mean? And he says, I think it was like, you got lucky, man. The lights were off. It was a shootout. We pointed our guns at each other's faces, and you got me in the neck. You got so lucky, it could have gone the other way around in a second. And they said, do you think it was just luck? Do you think if it happened again, Lalo would have killed Gus? And he says, yeah, 9 times out of 10, Lalo would have won. I think even Gus knows that. He sits down and he's like, that was the closest I've ever been to dying. That was sheer luck.
Mm-hmm. I don't know about the luck part, but yeah, I think he was close Lalo to dying. Was
definitely a badass. I mean, he escaped all those mercenaries in his house. And
yeah, he is. But it was Gus's territory, and he knew his right. plan was to shut off the lights and knew how to get to where he needed to go. But then again, Lalo already had his gun trained on Gus, so yeah, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, I still think there was a little bit of luck in there. I know it was two very smart people in a face-off, so I feel like it could have went another way. I knew Gus had to live. I mean, obviously he has to live to be in Breaking Bad, so I wasn't too fearful for him, but it was super intense.
This whole episode, especially when it was clear that Lalo was going to the laundry, I thought, okay, I think this is Lalo's last episode.
Yeah, for sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And the thing about whether he thought Kim would kill Gus, I thought, you know, maybe even though Tony Dalton didn't just say this, maybe there was like a little bit of like, well, if by some crazy chance she does happen to do it, awesome. That's gravy.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he would have been mad about it had she pulled it off, you know, still score one for him. One last little item. I don't know if this was mentioned. I haven't had a chance to listen. My schedule's been bananas with Stranger Things and so much going on. So I didn't get a chance to listen to the Insider podcast yet. So I don't know if this was mentioned or not. But I thought this was really interesting. Breaking Bad creator Vince Gilligan commissioned 2 statues of characters Walter White and Jesse Pinkman to be housed in Albuquerque, New Mexico, honoring the Emmy-winning AMC series. I thought that was really interesting. They had like a little ceremony for it, and Vince Gilligan was there, and he had a few words. He says, over the course of 15 years, 2 TV shows and 1 movie, Albuquerque has been wonderful to us. He was in a press release. Sorry. He says, I wanted to return the favor and give something back. The bronze statues will be donated to the city of Albuquerque by Gilligan and Sony Pictures Television. The sculptures are set to be on display at the Albuquerque Convention Center in July. And then Bryan Cranston and Aaron Paul released a joint statement, said, we also appreciate that the statues will be indoors and therefore protected from pigeons depositing their critiques on our heads.
Nice.
Yep. So thought that was pretty cool. If you're an Albuquerque and a fan, you should check out the statues. I would love to do that. I haven't been yet. Yeah,
get a picture.
So, yeah. So that's it. That's all I've got for now.
Nice. All right, let's move on to our final segment, listener responses.
Okay. So Gijo Putia says, brutally awesome. Poor Howard. He and Lalo were buried there the whole time.
Skull emoji.
From Diana Driscoll. Such a great episode. Couple of moments that stood out. Jimmy laying on the floor, being forced to stare at Howard. Lalo rolling his eyes at Jimmy's car. That was great.
It was good.
And Gus wiping the front of his shirt after Lalo touched it.
I noticed that. He was just so like, get your like stench off me.
Yeah, Lalo said Ford Taurus taupe, and it seemed like he was pretty disdainful. Alicia Stout says, Rima Joe, you called it. Lalo buried under the laundromat. Never thought it would be with Howard, though. Poor guy. Great episode. Wish they would drop them all. Now we have to wait another week. Gah. No, I don't want it to be over. P.S. What was it that made Gus go to the laundromat? Something Kim said about Saul talking Lalo out of killing Free? Well, hopefully we cover that in the podcast.
Ian Westwell says, I want to see Lalo and Howard rise up and cameo as Zeds in the last half of The Walking Dead.
Especially if their hand burst through the soil. I love that.
Heck yeah.
I love the whole idea of the fly being related to this whole thing. That was one of my favorite episodes of all time.
It could be both. I love that episode. Yeah.
It's the reincarnation of one of them smelling the other one.
Yeah, there you go. Email from Rinaldi. Hi, Jason. My name is Rinaldi, and I'm from Boston, but currently living in Portland, Maine. I'm excited that Better Call Saul is back for the final six episodes. I've enjoyed the richly detailed but fun conversation you, David, and Rima Joe have had regarding the show on House Podcastica. Thank you, Rinaldi.
Thank you.
It's great. This podcast is something I can look forward to after watching an episode of Better Call Saul. Episode 6 of 8 of Better Call Saul was great, with Jimmy and Kim being emotionally traumatized, but Kim surviving her encounter with Lalo, Jimmy managing to say just enough to talk Lalo into getting Lalo to slightly alter his plan, and Gus and Lalo having a final showdown at the Super Lab. The scene close to the end of the episode where Mike stared at Howard's wallet and wedding ring, reflecting on how he wasn't a player in the game but was dead regardless, moved me deeply. However, there is one moment that will forever shine in the episode called Point and Shoot. One character that stood out in a spectacular fashion. Lyle, the assistant manager, was unofficially promoted to manager for a week. This is a huge step up from having to overscrub the grills for no reason during season 5 of Better Call Saul. Congratulations, Lyle. One of these episodes, I will do a voice message and sing the Los Pollos Hermanos jingle that Lyle sung. The best moment of the episode for me. I am not going to try to sing this right now. Pollos Hermanos, Pollos Hermanos. Now, are we going to get some Gene Takovic screen time now that Lalo is dead and the cartel plotline is presumably over? Your fan in the New England area, Rinaldi.
Thanks, Rinaldi.
Thank you. Fire.
And one more from Laura, who I think wrote this before this episode aired. She says, Hi, Rima, Jason, and David. This is Laura, listening to your great podcast from Buffalo, New York. When I started listening to your Better Call Saul podcast for this last season, I remember you saying that you can't believe that anybody out there hasn't seen Breaking Bad. Well, I was one of them. I tried to watch it when it first came out and just couldn't get into it. All these years later, I wanted to watch it so I would get your references. Once I started, I couldn't stop. It was so good. I love that story.
Good.
She goes, I don't have anyone around me to talk about Breaking Bad, so I want to share one thought with you. It was so freaking awesome when this is spoilery, but we've said we're spoiling Breaking Bad stuff. When Gus got blown up in the medical facility just for the fact that he walked out of the room straightening his tie. That's so Gus. And then I guess if I am going to like where Gus straightened his tie when he dies, then I can't be mad at Lalo smiling, huh? When he dies. She goes on, and then when he falls, you see half his face is gone. That has to be one of the best character deaths ever. Can't argue with that.
This show also, this universe has the best double entendre titles.
Yeah.
Plan and Execution, face. Point and Shoot, and that one, Face Off.
Yeah. And Lalo said point and shoot in the episode where he was instructing them what to do. Just point and shoot.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Right. And this was a face off we all knew between Walt and Gus, but it was also Gus's face being blown off. Yeah. Oh, God. All right. And she goes on. Then came Howard. I sat there with my hands over my mouth in shock. Every episode is a masterpiece. I wish it wasn't ending. So now I'm all caught up to your podcast and waiting for the second half of Better Call Saul. Can't wait to listen to you three discuss the last episodes. You all are so articulate and interesting. Oh, thank you, Laura. Thanks for all you do. That's so nice to hear.
Laura has great taste.
I agree.
I've been enjoying this podcast, and I'm glad we're covering this show. It's It's really been a delight, and I was happy it was coming back on. We have one more message, and that's a call from Steve Brown.
Hello, House Podcast again. This is Steve. And I paused my TV and didn't realize it was paused. I was just staring at the sand for like 2 minutes. And now we got to shoot. This is for Better Call Saul, point and shoot. He said, you point and you shoot, not point and shoot. So it's not a mic drop. Okay. There he said, point and shoot, mic drop. Seriously, Jimmy? I mean, I know we all know that she's got way more backbone than you, but gosh. Lalo following her. Whew. I just knew Mike was going to stop her. Okay, so I'm assuming now Mike is at Jimmy's. Oh, and Stan Edgar, I mean, Gus Fring, went to the processing plant. The giant meth lab, right? Oh, shot him in his body armor. Ooh. Okay, so he fired all his bullets, Gus did, towards the direction of Lalo. Well, I guess all of those who watch Breaking Bad know now why Lalo is not in it. Well, and now Mike is going to take care of Howard's body and give Jimmy a new refrigerator. Wow. So I guess, yeah, technically Jimmy doesn't know that Lalo is dead. Wow, these last episodes are going to be good. I don't know what that voiceover meant for the continuing story. He said, we're going to wake up. I don't know if that's now or in the future. So, wow. Great episode. Can't wait for you guys to talk about it.
Yeah, there was that weird thing at the end where I couldn't tell if it was supposed to be like a preview of the season or a part of this episode. You know what I mean? It showed a black and white still of Saul's iconic office, and you heard Jimmy/Saul saying something like, just watch, we're going to wake up one day and we're not going to think about anything that happened or something like that.
That was from a previous season, and I didn't get a chance to go back, but that was something he and Kim were talking about.
Oh, okay. Still, yeah. Weird. Why'd they show that? I didn't like it.
I don't know. I think maybe just trying to make Kim feel better. I don't know. That one day we'll just not think about it. I don't know.
One day I will wake up and not worry about it.
I'll be a whole new person.
All right, that's our show. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. If you want to write in or leave us a message, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com. We have a button there that you can click and leave an audio message right there. I'd love to get some more audio feedback from you guys, but we love it all.
And while you are there, be sure to check out our other shows.
Yeah, the one I always think of and mention is that you're wrapping up Stranger Things. You're not done, right? You still have one more to go?
The finale, the two and a half hour finale. We just wrapped. Yeah, it'll probably be a 4-hour podcast is what Paik and I have been joking, because we're running about 2-hour time right now covering every episode. The episodes have gotten longer for sure, but we've been joking it's going to be like a 4-hour podcast. Hopefully we are just joking. But yeah, so we just covered episode 8, the penultimate episode last night, hoping to get that released tonight if the fates are on my side. And we'll cover the finale next week. It's been amazing.
You haven't seen it yet?
Nope.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear your reaction.
I'm behind on Stranger Things. Don't spoil me.
Where are you? No, I won't say anything because I'm on
episode season one, episode one.
Yeah. No, I'm in this season, but on episode 3, I think.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not spoiling anything,
but this was my favorite season of the show. I think by far.
It's definitely been one of mine. Yeah.
I've been neglecting to mention this, but we've got From Almost Ending with Alex and Lizzie, and that's a crazy show with Michael from Lost. I always forget his name. Harold Perrineau. Mm-hmm. It's a horror show in some weird alternate dimension. It's pretty cool. It's on, I think it's on Epix. Definitely recommend checking that out. And then August is going to be huge. We got She-Hulk. We're going to be covering House of the Dragon, Lock and Key, Tales of the Walking Dead. Am I missing anything? Do you have other? I mean, that's a lot right there.
say, can we please just not have any more? I can't. I have to sleep.
I want to do Andor. It looks awesome, but I just
go. You go for it. I'm talking me.
And then David and I are supposed to be covering Westworld right now. Sorry, everybody. We just don't have time. But maybe I haven't even watched any of it. Have you?
I have watched the first two episodes of Westworld.
So we had said if we liked it, we might go back and cover it.
Yeah. I'm reserving judgment. Okay. But I would say it's a lot more like season three than like seasons one and two.
Hmm. All right. Moving on.
Tells me what I need to know. I haven't had a chance to watch it either. I've been kind of waiting to hear... You know, a little.
I'm gonna watch it for sure.
Yeah,
I'll definitely watch it. I have to because I do love the show, but season three was a little sour for me.
Yeah, I love the show too. I'm definitely gonna continue to the end, but seasons one and two of that show were so brilliant, and season three was a step down. And so far, in my opinion, they haven't stepped back up.
Okay. Mm. Well, I would say then that maybe we won't cover every single episode, but I will at least do like
maybe at least cover the season as a whole
or something like that. Right?
You should at least do that. Yeah. Go ahead and just watch it and then kind of just wrap up all of them together. And
this season maybe... was terrible. No, I'm just kidding.
End of podcast. Yeah. Yeah. Well, for us, our next episode will be Better Call Saul Season 6, Episode 9, Fun and Games.
I don't trust that title.
I'd say Fun and Games is an interesting title considering what happened in this episode. Yeah. How do we
they
get
might
to
lighten
that
it up a bit just for contrast.
But maybe. Maybe we'll get that humor back, David, that, you, that you're missing.
So. I miss it too.
Yeah. But, oh, yeah. It's a big part.
I think so. It's going to pick up again.
Hope so.
All right. That is our show.
Thanks for listening.
Pollos hermanos, pollos hermanos.
Delicious chicken grilled or fried.
Pollos hermanos, pollos hermanos.
It will leave you satisfied.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.